Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
When I was a kid, my dad was a cop. Then he was in forensics. Then he was a New South Wales firefighter. This season of Loose Units is called Hot Stuff Coming Through. And apart from having an incredibly cool and stupid name, it's going to reveal the untold side of being a firefighter in Australia. Enjoy.
Welcome to Loose Units, Hot Stuff Coming Through. I'm your host, Paul Verhoeven, and across from me and many, many miles away is my ex-firefighter and ex-cop dad, John Verhoeven. Dad, how are you doing today?
In a word, marvellous, but I was worried then for a moment.
Why?
Because I thought you were going to say ex-dad.
Oh, no, I can't. I mean, I can't divorce. I can't. You know, there's like parents who can, kids who can divorce their parents. That was the whole thing about it.
Paul, over the weekend, we've had so much incredible feedback, positive feedback about your that special thing that you've written called Electric Blue. Your book, that's it. You remember?
Yeah.
You wrote a book.
Faintly, yeah. Yeah, there's a bit of a
haze. I just wanted to say, before we jump into this week's horrific episode with lots and lots of bad shit, because I know that the people, you know, haven't had a lot of horrific stories lately, but I'm about to make up for that.
Oh, boy.
I'd like to, personally, from the bottom of my what?
Heart.
What's an appropriate thing? That's it, heart. From the bottom of my heart, say thanks to everyone who's pre-ordered, including, Paul, your grandmother.
Oh, that's lovely.
Who's ordered 4.
Oh, jeezy crazy. Yeah.
So that's pretty full on. I haven't ordered any.
Well, you know, I think, you know, I wrote it about you, so I think you get a copy.
I hope so.
I think we'll comp you at some point.
Thank you. You're very kind.
But really, thank you so much, everyone who's pre-ordered the book. Just please keep pre-ordering, you know, buy it for gifts for people. Let's just absolutely flood the market with this thing. So many of you are curious as to where you can pre-order Electric Blue, my next book. It is, you can go to penguin.com.au and then search for Electric Blue. And then there's a whole bunch of different options, you know, for Kindle and for Amazon and for blah, 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 blah. We'll have more info.
Did you just say for Amazon or for Amazon?
Well, I could have said for Amazon, you know, like the French Amazon.
It sounded like that.
For Amazon. Le Framazon. But seriously, Electric Blue, it's out Father's Day, and lots of really exciting stuff's going to be happening with it. And there's all kinds of other exciting stuff happening in the wings that we can't talk about. But what we can talk about on this Fire Brigade-themed podcast is a single word that Dad sent to me in all caps, and he just said backburning. So, Dad, we haven't talked about backburning. For the layman, what is backburning?
Okay, so backburning, which is a very... Well, it's a topic that, for lots of reasons, they talk about it all the time in terms of creating fire, burning ground fuel in preparation for the next season. And it's always been a contentious issue. So you've got the conservation people on one side that just say, look, we should just let nature take its course.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is, and it's a cycle that's been happening in Australia for millennia, thousands.
Well, there's certain plants that we have that...
require fire
to actually...
Correct, yeah. Require extreme heat for the nut to actually... Well, the nut's inside. Is the nut inside the
Please
case?
Stop saying nut.
And then the extreme heat facilitates the pod to open up and to reveal the nut that actually then, in theory, drops to the ground.
Oh,
unless
that's
a what is... Unlikely, I haven't seen this happen, but what could happen is that as the nut's falling, a koala bear that might be just hanging in a fork could actually reach out and grab it. And in doing so, even though they don't eat them, that would stop the nut hitting the ground. But that's unlikely. But what happens generally is the nut does hit the ground, and then it we have rain. Are you laughing, Paul?
Well, it just sounds like you're talking about someone's balls dropping, but that's okay.
And then fuck. I promised I wouldn't laugh. Because this is so uncool to be laughing. No, we're all laughing now.
Yeah.
But where are we going in the not too distant future?
Well, let us just get it out of our system then. All right. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so that and they it, they grow. The plants grow from the...
Yeah. So tired. Oh,
anyway.
Our premier today announced that we can leave the house. I think it's like a moment too soon. Oh, my God.
I understand. I've never lost it like that. And for all the listeners, I'm not going to apologise because I think it's part of the rawness. This is it's off the cuff.
Mm-hmm. Damn straight.
And that's great. Mm. Mm. So...
Backburning.
Yeah. So what happens... I think I know that I mentioned it once. I'm not sure whether... It probably was a long time ago, but here's one of the things they do to measure ground fuel. They've got from memory, I think it was a meter square tied onto a piece of rope.
Yeah.
They pull up in any place in the bush. They throw it out into the bush. Actually, this is bloody fascinating. They then follow the rope to the square.
Yep.
And they then get a knife and they cut through all the fuel, i.e. the leaves and twigs and everything.
Oh, so that's what you mean when you say fuel. You mean like
ground
stuff,
fuel.
Stuff that can burn. Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
And then they cut right down to the soil.
Yep.
They then gather up all the fuel into a bag.
Mm-hmm.
They then, and someone might like to correct me, but I have a feeling from memory that they dry the contents and then they weigh it. And then through fairly, I imagine, either complex or not complex mathematical computations,
mm-hmm.
they can calculate the ground fuel mass per hectare, per square kilometre, square mile, per acre, whatever they decide, whatever is the standard they use.
Yeah.
And then that gives them an indication of the fuel that will actually create that magnificent, not magnificent, but that amazing effect that we see that enables fires to actually travel rapidly through the forests.
Mm.
Because it's just got... Because let's go back to basics. The three things that the fire requires. Fuel,
mm-hmm.
heat, and oxygen.
Gotcha.
And... those three ingredients in a bushfire are abundant. But if you can take one of those three things out of the triangle, the fire will cease to exist. So you know that if you can starve... an analogy is that if we light a candle and we smother the flame, we are depriving the fire of oxygen. If we got rid of the wick or the wax, that's the fuel...
Mm-hmm.
So these are the things that are required, and the heat obviously is fairly self-explanatory.
Yeah, great.
So with a backburn, you are given a special device, which is like a little red can with a long tube, and at the ends this, what I would describe. I'm trying to think of a good way. Imagine what's a good way of describing it. Imagine if you had sort of cotton wool wrapped in a sort of a like a sieve. Actually. Funnily enough, Paul, it looks a little bit like the end of my microphone.
Oh, okay.
So what happens is you now I'm not quite sure of the whether I get this right, but I from memory it was 2/3 diesel, 1/3 petrol.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds diabolical. And you mix it up, you pour it in the bottom, and then you turn and it's got a handle.
Yeah.
And it's a fancy thing. And you light the top of it, and then when you sort of invert so that the sort of the end where the fuel is going to come out of, and it comes out in dollops. It doesn't just piss out everywhere. It comes out fairly gradually, but that's a light. So as you, it's like dropping some sort of waxy stuff onto the floor, but it's burning. Or, you know, if you burn rubber and then you turn, as the rubber falls to the ground, it's still on fire and then it burns when it's on the ground. So you're actually creating this accelerant. And what you do is you just walk along these lines that have been created
right
to the side of a road, and you drip. It's called a drip torch. I mean, it's sort of fairly self-explanatory in terms of what it's doing. And you are leaving a beautiful trail of fairly low-level flame. And the thing is that that flame, then it's not going to walk or work towards you because you've chosen the most, the best conditions. No wind, generally in the cooler months. And it's really well organized. All the neighbors know, you've got teams, you've got standby people with water. You might have some aerial appliances. It's all really, really sort of well organized. The thing is that the fire slowly, very, very slowly, because bearing in mind there's no wind, makes its way into the bush. And as it goes, it's just burning the ground fuel. You don't give it a chance. If it looks as though it's going to creep up a big tree, you just knock it out. That's the term they use. And there are various techniques they use to knock these things out. Knock out just means to put out.
Yeah.
But the thing is, Paul, that in mid-June of 2000, the New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife Service, they had some officers that were male and female that had decided to do some backburning in the Ku-ring-gai National Park, which is a park we know well.
Features very, very prominently in Electric Blue, actually.
Correct.
Yeah.
And as the listeners know, and will come to know more detail in relation to perhaps what may be said or not said in your second book, some incredible things. I mean, there have been some bloody terrible things happen in that park. There was a terrible, terrible murder not so long ago, which is not related to when I was in the police force. But, people, because... I was actually doing some photography up there, get ready for this, and this is sort of, again, pretty well unrehearsed, but an hour and a half, 2 hours ago, I was in that park taking photographs.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Really?
Yeah. And so the park, remember the pharmacist that his grandson used to go down to that haunt down in the national park and used a crossbow and used to shoot people?
No.
And bring their bodies back and put them in a refrigerator?
What? No.
And your grandmother taught him?
No. Fucking what?
Yeah.
Hang on.
Yep. Are you sure that I haven't told you this story?
I'm like 1,000, 10,000% sure you've never told me this story. Yeah.
Oh, God.
A crossbow.
A crossbow. He was known as the... Oh, boy.
Mate, fucking hell.
Seriously heavy.
Do you want to tell it now?
Are you sure?
Or do you want to do the backburning now and then next week listeners can tune in and hear this story?
Yeah. I cannot believe I haven't told you that. So you've got no idea where this story's going?
Nope.
Okay, well, that particular incident I'll tell you about next week.
Great, we'll do that next week.
I say you, I mean you and all the everyone else.
Yeah.
But as I was saying, in June 2000, these National Parks officers that... Look, it's all very well for me to speak in hindsight, but I have also read the ruling, and they, because it went to court, and there were 17 findings to be held against national parks in terms of the things that they'd done wrong, basically. So what happened was they were doing a backburn. They had either seven or eight of their officers, and the conditions were perfect. We're talking the best conditions you can possibly have. It's winter.
Yep.
It was a beautiful day. There's no wind.
Just to be clear, you mean the best possible conditions for a backburn. Not for a fire. Okay.
No.
Okay.
The opposite. So, you know, as I said to you and the listeners, when you do a backburn, you want things to be really... You certainly don't want any wind, because we all know that, backburning can get away from you.
Yeah.
And the results can be terrible. And on this particular day, the fire, everything was honky-dory. Unfortunately, the fire got away. The conditions changed. Three of the officers attached to that organisation, they died in the bush. They were burnt to death. A fourth officer lived for about 8 weeks, and he died. But the New South Wales Fire Brigade were called in, obviously, as were other organisations, because, you know, it was clearly getting out of control, and Barara Fire Station was one of the fire stations that were the first at the scene.
Yeah.
The fireys went into the bush. They came across various burnt people, but one of the most terrible and devastating scenes that the fire brigade from Barara, the fireys, had encountered or did encounter on that particular day, and it's something that, again, for the listeners, was not reported, obviously. But it's been a while. It's been almost 20 years ago. And again, this is from a fire brigade perspective. This is an example of some of the heavy shit that they see. The fireys from Barara on a particular platoon, they, in fact, at first thought it was a burnt tree. And it had sort of sculptural attributes. And it was sitting in a sort of a crouched position on a rock. And it was a human being that was burnt beyond recognition. It was one of those National Parks and Wildlife rangers that had been fighting the fire. It got away from them. They were trapped. This particular guy, he managed to get on top of this rock where, I don't know, for whatever reason, imagine what's happening. There's a fire burning around you, and it basically... And there he stayed in that frozen position. And my colleagues, the wonderful New South Wales Fire Brigade guys on that particular fateful shift, they happened to come across his body. Now imagine just imagine seeing that beyond. But a terrible, terrible thing to discover. And it happened during the day, so yeah, it would have been very visceral. So that's pretty heavy. Again, you know, they don't get counselling, these fireys. And then think about the poor, the ambos, the paramedics, all the people involved, the contractors, then getting the remains. They have to have life pronounced extinct, as you know.
Mm.
And speaking about, I mean, I've explained to you how back in the 80s when we found, for example, bones, we'd have the bones, we had to take the bones to the Mater Hospital, and the ambulance occasionally, very rarely, I know they certainly don't do it now, but occasionally the ambos would take bones and help you out and get them to the morgue.
Right, okay.
Like a skeleton, for example.
Sure.
But here's, I mean, this is going to sound, I mean, imagine we've just gone from this burnt sort of effigy of a human on a rock who's died. I mean, he didn't go to work that day thinking, I'm not coming home. So there's all that trauma as well. But he would have been surrounded by fire. I mean, you can't even, you just hope that the carbon and the smoke and all the bad shit in the flames, you hope that he passed out and possibly... Perhaps also because remember that one of the keys with fires is that there's an incredible sort of ferocious desire for the fire to absorb and use as much oxygen as possible. And hopefully that he perhaps, sucked on his last breath prior to burning. So, yeah, but then it's funny how I can go, not funny, but weird how I can go from that to then saying that, and I know I've discussed this with the listeners before, and that is that sometimes we had to take bones to the hospital, and we had to, I'll never forget it, where we had a doctor come out in his coat with his stethoscope, and he comedically perhaps put his, because he realised it was a total joke, but had to be done, And he had to pronounce life extinct on a skeleton. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's dreadful.
And he even got his stethoscope and sort of put it down near his chest on these bones. But he did that kind of partially because he realised the stupidity of the whole thing. And it was pretty stupid. With terrible things where it's clearly clear that the person is deceased, they still have to have life pronounced extinct.
Mm.
Which is kind of, it makes sense, but it's still weird to imagine that that's still done. Yeah. I guess so there can be no ambiguity mm-hmm. or doubt, but it's just a procedure that they go through. So that's fairly fascinating.
Yeah.
But there was this case, I mean, all the listeners, or hopefully a lot of the listeners know that when I was in the New South Wales Fire Brigades, you know, doing shift work, 2 days, two nights, four off, and I had the antique business going, which was, you know, pretty tough.
You know, what's funny is there's probably a lot of people wondering how you ended up in the, working at a funeral home with all the jobs you've had, and coincidentally, if you want to find out, you know, a very Hollywood version of how that happened, it's in Electric Blue. So the book actually explains how Dad and Mum ended up working at a funeral home. So you told me about a story where a guy was fighting fires up in New Guinea, and I assume there was there backburning in that story as well.
Yeah, they were getting ready for some big mining operation, and they needed to clear the forest.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular guy, he was he was not, as in it happens all the time, but he was not trained to a very high professional level in relation to backburning. And this was, he was working for a very, very big multinational mining company. And obviously in the middle of nowhere up in New Guinea, they need to clear the forest for lots of reasons. They have to create runways. And he was doing some backburning up there. But here's the really, really kind of spooky and surreal thing, is that he was being lowered down into, through the canopy, yep. on the end of a like a long rope, and he was on wearing a harness with all his gear, and he was being lowered down into the forest to commence backburning. A gust of wind picked up the helicopter that he was dangling. Probably, I would say, from my experience in the air wing, he would have been probably maybe 4 or 5 stories down. So you can imagine how far, because these cables on these helicopters, some of them are really, really long when they do sea rescues, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And he was at the end of this thing, and when he got to the, so in theory he was going to get to the ground, then unhitch himself with all his gear, and then he was going to commence some backburning in the jungle.
Yeah.
And then he'd make his way to a clearing, and then, you know, once he'd done what he had to do, and then he'd be lifted to safety. But what happened was, as they were kind of, he's right in the middle of the canopy, 30 or 40 feet from the ground, the helicopter started to be buffeted by wind.
Oh, Christ.
And he was being basically torn and dragged through the canopy. Now, there's a very, very simple rule when you're in a helicopter and you're doing this sort of work. Can you think about what the guy that's controlling the winch is going to do?
Christ, I don't know. We'd either wind him up or drop him off.
How do you think they drop him off?
They would
lower the wire.
They cut the wire.
That's what they do in an emergency. So they cut the wire. They've already dragged the shit out of this guy through the canopy. The poor pilot's trying to... Well, okay. It's that classic case of does one person die and maybe survive, or do they lose the entire crew? So there's a pilot, right. Co-pilot, at least one or two people in the back. There's the guy controlling the winch.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from the fact that, dare I say it, and this is going to sound terrible, but it's also an exceptionally valuable piece of equipment. I think that all these things play in, but more so, are we going to... Because it's catastrophic if that cable gets wrapped around a tree. It's all over. So they cut. Now, I remember when I was in the air wing, they had these special pliers, and if something untoward happened, there was a technique, we'd cut the wire. Anyway, so this poor guy who's on the end of this thing, I mean, you don't know what was going through his head. He might be thinking... Shit, this is not good, but he might have still been okay. But they don't know that. But then they cut him. So then he not only has sustained various injuries, possibly, whilst he's being buffeted and torn through trees, but then he goes into free fall, 4 or 5 stories down. Now, if you jump off a 4 or 5-story building, you're fucked. That's assuming you're in perfect condition prior to them cutting the wire. So he's then gone down and he died. Now, his body had to come back to Australia. And when I worked for Kinsella Funeral Homes, I had no idea when I started. I got a job there My job was to polish the bloody cars and wax them. That's what I was a shit kicker. Right. I mean, I wasn't interested in anything else because I was in, you know, I was in the fire brigade. I just needed a second job.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I find myself driving one day out to the airport at Kingsford Smith, and we had to pick up the coffin that came off the plane. That it was a private jet that the mining company, a massive international mining company, they had to deliver this poor dead guy back to Sydney. We picked up the casket, but because he'd been flying, they had to seal him in a lead casket, and then we got him, and they'd embalmed him, kind of. Mm-hmm. I've got the most incredible funeral stories, but you know they'll come later on.
Yeah, we can tell those stories later.
Yeah, yeah. But we got him back to the funeral home, and we then unsealed the lead casket. Mm-hmm. To reveal this poor guy. And then I realised, due to my forensic background, that a lot more had happened to him than just being cut loose.
What do you mean?
He had sustained the most terrible injuries while he was still alive, being dragged around in the canopy of this forest.
Yeah.
And it was really, really bad. So, yeah, that's just a little segue into the sort of dipping my toe into the...
The funeral home stuff.
I
don't know how you are still upright at this point. Honestly, some of the stuff you've lived through has been really horrifying. I know a few times, Dad. Sorry, you go.
No. I was just going to say, Paul, that you know, the listeners have been with us on this journey. You know, remember how every live show we'd talk about stuff that was not like they were hearing it, you know, for the first time.
Yes,
not
very
for press,
much
so to speak. But yeah. You know, I haven't. I mean, all the listeners know that I've seen some diabolical stuff, and I still do make that that comment that the only thing that I've never done really is go to war, and
yeah.
I don't want to go. And now I'm too old to go, thank God. The things that I'd seen in forensics and the fire brigade and work cover, which everyone's sort of come along for the journey, I think emotionally the things that I saw in the funeral industry were the ones that were definitely, you know, the worst, because not only did I see the bad shit, but I then had to deal with the families.
That's another story.
Yeah.
Well, I think several times we've, you know, like flagged the notion of doing our next season on the funeral home period, on your time in the funeral home industry. Mm. I think I would love to hear from listeners and see what they think of that idea, whether they would like us to do, you know, a season based on Dad's time basically running a funeral home, which is, you know, it's a whole other, you know, kettle of fish.
It is.
Yeah, but unfortunately, that is all the time we have this week for this episode of Loose Units Hot Stuff Coming Through. Thank you so much for listening. Seriously, we said it before and we're going to say it again. Thank you to all of you who have sent in messages and photos and stuff and, you know, just told us that you're going to be pre-ordering Electric Blue. It means the absolute world. And obviously, it's my second book. It's, you know, it's a big deal and we're just so excited for it to hit bookshelves and, you know, bookstores and libraries and, you know, grab an ebook, grab an audiobook, grab the physical copy. But either way, pre-order it now if you want this to go global. Dad and I will be back at the end of this week for another episode of our quarantine spin-off, Loose Ends. Take it easy and we'll see you then.
All the best. Bye-bye.
New glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.